Well, I very much appreciated the comments that Mr. Baker gave in the announcements section. You know, there is a lot going on in our world today, and our politicians, they just don't have a clue. This same person who now says Republicans are going to change the world, I guess, isn't it the same person who quoted, "We have to pass that law to see what's in it"?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Amazing. We're run by idiots. That's just all there is to it. I don't know what else to say. But, you know, we see the news. And like Mr. Baker was talking about, the terrorism that's going on, we don't seem to have an answer for that. And now Russia is waking up again. I read an article just recently where they're creating new nuclear weapons and new missiles to break our missile defense shield. And, you know, we wonder how bad things can get because, you know, we look back at other generations and probably our parents thought, wow, this is really bad. But, you know, it seems to get increasingly more dangerous in the world. And we have our busy lives to lead. We have obligations, we have jobs, we have school, and we go about our daily life, and we get distracted. We get distracted about what's important. What's important? Why are we here? We hear a lot of sermons started that way. You know, we are only here for one really, really good reason. The reason that we were called at this time, in this place, in this era, is to build character as we go along. We're going through that process. It's a process of change, of hard work. It requires us to do something to build that character that will ultimately lead us to our ultimate destiny. You know, it's a lifelong quest, this character building process. Mr. Armstrong wrote about this in his famous booklet, Why Were You Born? And he says in that booklet, I want to quote a little piece of that. He says, the first chapter of Genesis, called the creation chapter, actually does not record the completed creation at all. Man's creation was not finished. Read that amazing truth again. Be sure you understand. What was created, as revealed in Genesis 1, was the physical creation. The mortal, physical man and woman, the physical material with which to create the spiritual creation. The Bible plainly reveals that, as we will see, what God actually is creating in the human family, the crowning supreme masterpiece of His works of creation. And that will be finished when millions, yes, billions of humans converted into spiritual character, perfect spiritual character. This spiritual creation is still in process. And he goes on later to say in that booklet, character is the possession and practice of love, patience, mercy, faith, kindness, gentleness, meekness, temperance, self-restraint, and a right self-direction. Character involves knowledge, wisdom, purpose, ability, all properly controlled and developed, and through independent choice. We have to make independent choices. We have to make wise choices. I don't know, you may remember I gave a sermon about choices with the Newton's Cradle, if you remember that. But we are called to choose wisely. He continues, one final quote from that booklet. He says, holy righteous character is something that's developed only through experience. Experience requires time and circumstances. And so God creates the time and the circumstances which produce that character. So that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about that process. If you like to write down titles, Building Character, a Lifelong Quest. The World Book Encyclopedia defines character. You have to have a definition. as all qualities or features possessed, moral strength or weakness, the special way in which a person feels, thinks, and acts, moral firmness, self-control, integrity, reputation. Reputation is very important. A distinctive feature, trait, or characteristic. That's the definition from the World Book Encyclopedia Dictionary. But I like the definition that Mr. Armstrong gives himself. The Mystery of the Ages book, he wrote on page 101, "Godly spiritual character is the habitual action and conduct of a person or created entity to come to the knowledge of the true ways of God and to exercise the will to follow those ways even against opposition, temptation, or self-desire to the contrary." I think that's an excellent, excellent definition. Let me read that again. Godly spiritual character is the habitual action, it becomes habitual, and conduct of the person or created entity to come to the knowledge of the true ways of God and to exercise the will to follow those ways, even against opposition, temptation, or self-desire to the contrary. So with that definition, it should be easier as we go along in this walk of life. It should become a habit. Hard at first, easier as we go along. It should become a habit. And we can judge ourselves as to how we're doing. Because it's not what we say. It's what we do. It's how we act. And we will all be known by what we do. All of us will. Let's remember what Matthew 7 said, if you want to turn over to Matthew 7. And I'll read this out of the Good News translation. But Matthew 7, and beginning in verse 15, it says here, "Be on your guard against false prophets. They come to you looking like sheep on the outside, but on the inside, they're really like wild wolves. You'll know them by what they do. Thorn bushes do not bear grapes, and briars do not bear figs." It's what they do. It's not what they say. It's what they do. Verse 17, "A healthy tree bears good fruit. A poor tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, but a poor tree cannot bear good fruit. And any tree that doesn't bear good fruit is cut down and thrown in the fire. So then you'll know the false prophets by what they do." And that applies to us as well. What do you do? The Bible contains a lot of analogies, a lot of examples of this righteous character and the process of building this character. Let's look at one of them by turning over to 1 Corinthians 3. 1 Corinthians 3. And begin in verse 10, and I'll read this from the Good News Version again. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 10. "Using the gift that God gave me, I did the work of an expert builder and laid the foundation, and someone else is building on it. But each of you must be careful how you build. For God has already placed Jesus Christ as the one and only foundation, and no other foundation can be laid. Some will use gold or silver or precious stones in building on the foundation, but others will use wood, grass, or straw. And the quality of each person's work will be seen when the day Christ exposes. For on that day, fire will reveal everyone's work. The fire will test it and show its real quality." And in verse 14, "If what was built on the foundation survives the fire, the builder will receive a reward. There is a day that we will be tested. Our character will be tested. Our fruits will be tested. And quite, sadly, many have failed that test. Or maybe I should say they are failing that test. There are a lot of people that were here with us, and look at the small group we have. Maybe they'll repent. Maybe they'll come back. That's not for me to say. But, we can identify those who show godly character in ourselves and in others. Do they follow, as Mr. Armstrong's definition, do they follow that character? Do they do the right thing when there's opposition to follow the crowd? We all know people that have left, and they built on that foundation with straw, with wood, and with hay. This last feast, we were in Park City, Utah, and we had a great feast. I know many of you were there. But we had a sad time as well, and some of you know this. When we first came into the church, our second feast, we went to Jamaica. Now, this was in about 5 B.C. No, 5 years before kids. 5 years before children. And we met a couple from New Jersey. We were 24. Goodness gracious, we were 24. We met a couple from New Jersey, and we just hit it off. They didn't have any children. They were a little older. I think they were probably in their mid-30s. But we hit it off. And we just had a great relationship. We developed a great relationship. Ended up talking, sending letters back and forth. Back in those days, you had to pay for a phone call. And we decided the next year we'd go back to Jamaica again with them, and we did. And we had such a great time. We went up to visit them during the holy days. I believe it was the spring holy days. We went to New Jersey. We kept the next feast with them in Trinidad, Tobago. And then we started to have children. Our family developed. They couldn't have any children, and we just kind of grew apart. It was just by distance, and we weren't going to the same feast sites, and we lost track of them. And all this time, we were wondering where they were. What happened to them? And we met a lady at the feast. Sharon met a lady at the feast and started talking like we all do. Introduced herself, and she was from Trenton, New Jersey. Well, what do you know? We know somebody from way back. I'm her sister, she told Sharon. Wow, where are they at? What are they doing? Well, they're not doing anything. And she called on their cell phone. She called right from services where we were standing there before services, not during services. And we talked to them. And it was very sad. Oh, it's feast time? Really? Well, we don't do that junk anymore. Very sad. Very sad, because we were very close to them. It's a shame that that happens. We've all got those stories. All of us have those stories. Some of us, even family members, that have left. It's really a shame. It reminds me of what Paul said in Ephesians 4, if you will turn over there. Ephesians 4. And I'm going to start reading in verse 12, and this is out of the New Living Translation. I really like the way these verses are translated in the New Living Translation. Ephesians 4. And in reference to the true ministers of God, Paul begins by saying, verse 12, their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. until we all come to such unity in the faith and knowledge of God's Son that we'll be mature and full grown in the Lord, measuring up to the full stature of Christ. I really like the way this next verse is translated in verse 14. Then we will no longer be like children, forever changing our minds about what we believe because someone's told us something different, or because someone cleverly lied to us and made the lie sound like the truth. Verse 15, instead, we'll hold to the truth in love, becoming more and more in every way like Christ, who is the head of the body, the church. But unfortunately, there are false teachers. The Bible warns of those. There are false ministers. There are people here that are out to get, not here, I hope, that are out to get what they can get. I mean, you turn on the TV, and you know those guys are in it for the money, most of them. And unfortunately, there are some in the churches of God. I've been asked once or twice by members that I used to attend with that are attending other congregations now, other associations, why did I take this path? Why am I here? Why did I come here? I wonder, you probably have been asked that by some of your friends, some of your family members, maybe. How do you answer that question? Why do you attend CAGWA? Why this organization? Well, some might say, well, I really didn't like how certain people were treated during this whole ordeal. Or some might say, I don't like the way this international thing was handled. And, you know, I'm not going to go on about that. I didn't like those things either. But that's not my answer. My answer always is that I looked at the character and I followed the character. And I got away from the characters. That's my answer. I followed men that, as far as I know, did not compromise with God's truth. Right along with Mr. Armstrong's definition of that godly spiritual character, to go in the right direction, even when it's tough, even when it's hard. And perhaps when they saw their livelihood coming to an end. Those men exhibit character. I won't dwell on that very much, but I do want to give one example. I have an old article clipping here from 1995. And it comes from the Worldwide News, and it's a very short article. I'll just read this. The title of it is Comments Praise the New Covenant Teaching. And I'll go on. The encouraging comments from our ministry all across the nation have been inspiring to my wife, Blank, and me. Blank's not her real name. It seems that each person has hit his or her own personal struggle in coming to the understanding of what God is leading us to collectively know and to do as his children. Learning is painful. There's nothing easy about it. I used to believe and preach that the most difficult aspect of life was child-rearing. I've changed my mind. It's being a Christian. Thanks to Mr. Dukacz's leadership and relationship with God, we've been led by the Spirit to come to a deeper, richer, fuller understanding of what it means to be a Christian. This understanding appears to be wholly of the Spirit. When the veil's removed, all comes into place. Spiritual renewal is being worked out in a powerful and wonderful way throughout the church. At Ambassador University, we have some on the faculty, both lay members and ministers, who have not been able to accept the New Covenant teachings or understandings. The majority of the faculty, however, have and are deeply thrilled and excited about these new understandings. Some faculty and students have decided that they'll work in opposition, and that's sad, but each person has to come to his or her own decision. All of our children, this man says, and their mates remain loyal to God's church and work as administered by Mr. Dukacz. I believe by early summer, the ambassador community will be of one mind again, and will go forward with the wonderful work that lies ahead It's going to be a very large and exciting work, and I hope we can all grasp the vision and significance of it. So here's someone that was in the church for years and years. And like it says in Ephesians 14, or 4, verse 14, they changed their mind when someone told them something different. It's kind of a sad thing. You know, but things didn't go as this person thought. It didn't grow. It shrunk. And as a matter of fact, I hadn't read the book, but there was a book put out, Honey, I Shrunk the Church, was the name of it. Maybe some of you had seen that or read it. I didn't read it. I thought it was a clever title, though. But, you know, it didn't go the way this person thought. And pretty soon, due to budget cutbacks, this person lost their job. And now this person is in a prominent position in one of the other congregations. He changed his mind again. Why do you think he changed his mind twice? You know, there's a lot of people, there's others that have compromised with God's truth, back and forth, and they flip-flop. What kind of character is demonstrated by that? What do you think? What kind of character? More importantly, what does the Bible say about someone like that? Let's turn over to Romans 16. We're warned that there are people like that. We have real life examples. This isn't new. This happened all through the history of the church. Romans 16, and again from the New Living Translation, and in verse 17, Paul says, Now I want to make one more appeal, my dear sisters and brothers. Watch out for people who cause division and upset people's faith by teaching things that are contrary to what you've been taught. Stay away from them. Verse 18, such people are not serving Christ our Lord. They're serving their own personal interests. By smooth talk and glowing words, they deceive innocent people. But everyone knows, verse 19, that you are obedient to the Lord. This makes me very happy. I want you to see clearly what is right and to stay innocent of any wrong. I don't know, that seems like good advice to me. Stay away from them. James tells us that a double-minded person is unstable in all his ways. And we've seen that in practice over the last 20 years or more. You know, I guess I'm so critical, and I'm not telling you this example because I think that we're some giant spiritual character examples, but when these people saw their paychecks coming to an end, they made one decision. When we came into the church, we're first-generation Christians. We don't have, our parents aren't in the church. We don't have any family in the church. We were married in August, and in October, I heard Mr. Armstrong on the radio, and that was our first contact. She was Catholic, and she thought I was crazy. But, to make a long story short, we both worked at the same little electronic manufacturing company in Cincinnati. And we both worked night shift. Telephone. We both worked night shift, which included Friday evening with overtime on Saturday. And up until we came in contact with the church, we didn't have a problem with that. But we got some really, really good advice from the ministry, I believe. When we began attending, we said, look, you know, here's our livelihoods here. What do we do? And the advice was, and this is what we did. We went to the vice president, which is a small company, about 200 employees. We went to the vice president and said, look, this is what we're going to do. And by such and such date, we're not going to work on the Sabbath any longer because this is our new beliefs. And he thought about it for a little bit. And he came back and he had a meeting with Sharon and I. We're putting our both jobs on the line, newly married couple. He came back and he said, well, I've talked to the attorneys and we don't have to do this. I mean, you accepted this job before this. You've been working these hours. And I said, you don't understand. We're not going to sue you. That's what he was worried about, you know, the civil suit, religious discrimination. I said, no, you guys have been good to us. We're not going to sue you. And it's not your fault that we're changing our lives. If you don't want us here, we'll just quit. We'll voluntarily quit. Just let us know what you want us to do. And I suppose that attitude boggled his mind. Because he came back a couple of days later and he created a part-time position for Sharon where she didn't have to work on Friday. And I worked Monday through Thursday at night and then came back in and worked Friday during the day. And we did that for years. And I don't tell you that story just because we're so great and these guys aren't. I'm just saying that, you know, where's the character for someone who flip-flops back and forth and doesn't put God first? You know, referring back to 1 Corinthians 3 again, these people built on the foundation, but they built with wood and straw and with hay. But we're told to use gold and silver and precious stones. Why is that? You know, gold is a really good analogy for that character. You've heard character of gold. You probably heard sermonettes along that same line. You know, wood, grass, hay, very easy to come by. Very easily obtainable materials. But it takes about 20 tons of ore to get an ounce of pure gold. It takes a lot of work to get that pure gold. It's a very good analogy because it takes a lot of work to build the appropriate character that Mr. Armstrong defines. And there's fool's gold out there as well. It looks like gold, feels like gold, but it's worthless. And it's found out because someone will find out that it's not real. And you could have been fooled, but it's not real. So gold is a very good analogy for the character that we need to build. And there's another characteristic of gold that makes it a good analogy, because impure gold, when you heat it, it forms slag on the top and it purifies itself. You can pull that slag off, let it cool back down, and you have pure gold again. And that's the way it is with us. Our character is tried and tested, heated up, and we develop pure character, that godly character that Mr. Armstrong talks about. So gold's a very good analogy. Another analogy that's a very good analogy is found in Matthew 5. If you would turn over to Matthew 5. And I'll read this from the Good News Version. Matthew 5. Christ uses salt here as an analogy. And in verse 13 he says, You are like salt for the whole human race. But if the salt loses its saltiness, there's no way to make it salty again. It's become worthless and it's thrown out and trampled on it. Salt. Why salt? Why do we use salt as an analogy? But it's really a great analogy if you look at it, because salt is very pure in its composition. Germs cannot grow in salt. And God's people are to be pure. Just a few verses up in Matthew 5:8, we see, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Purity is a wonderful trait to possess. How does salt lose its saltiness? Or as the King James Version puts it, its savor. How does that occur? Well, it's a pretty enduring mineral. It's in the salt mines under lots of pressure for thousands and thousands of years, but it still has its savor. It still has its saltiness. Even refined salt can be kept a long, long time without being ruined. But salt is ruined when it chemically reacts with an outside material, an outside source. And just as us, we can be ruined by outside influences. We can be chemically compromised the same way. You know, I have so little in common anymore with other folks other than church members that we've been in Knoxville for about 22 years, and probably I can count on one hand things that I've done with people from work or outside the church, because it's always uncomfortable. Something always happens that I don't care for. Those outside influences, those things that can cause you to stumble. I was thinking for a long time when I was putting this sermon together, and there's only a few things that I've done with folks, and it never turns out very well for some reason. But we try to be good neighbors. We say hi to everybody. We wave. We talk to people. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about doing a recreational activity with someone. You know, we're pretty good neighbors unless I cut the grass on Sunday. And I actually do get notes about cutting the grass on the Sabbath from our evangelist next door. That's another story. But we're friendly enough to everyone. I'm friendly at work. I get along with everyone. I just don't like to do things with them. You know, it's not the same. It's a different character. It's a different spirit. And I don't think it's any kind of sin to have outside friends. I'm not saying that. But, you know, things like this. A couple of years after I moved to Knoxville, I was invited to go fishing with my boss. And he kept bugging me. The fish are really hitting. I'm not a fisherman. I have a boat, but we ski. I don't fish, you know. We ski and tube and play around. So I said, okay, fine, we'll go fishing on some Sunday, I remember. And we were going to go to Lake Loudoun. So we were supposed to meet at a shopping center close to where the boat ramp was. And I pulled in first, and he came a few minutes later, you know, wasn't late, was pulling his boat. And I got my gear out of the car and opened the passenger door, and the pot smoke rolled out. We've got queue clearances. I can't be around that stuff. I've got enough problems on my own. You know, I don't need that, really. But that's what happens when you go, you know, something always happens to me. You know, and just like salt's contaminated with outside influences, we can be contaminated if we're not careful by the outside world. Albert Hubbard was a American philosopher, and he said this. He said, "The world bestows its big prizes, both in money and in honors, for one thing, and that's initiative." And he said, "What is initiative?" He said, "I'll tell you. It's doing the right thing without being told. But next to doing the right thing without being told is doing the right thing when you're told once." So he's grouping. He's grouping people. And he said, "Next, there are those who never do the right thing until they're told twice. Those people get no honors and usually a small paycheck. Next, there are those who do the right thing only when necessity kicks them from behind. And these get indifference instead of honors and a pittance for pay. This kind spends most of its time polishing a bench with a hard luck story. Then still lower, down the scale than this, we find the fellow who won't do the right thing, even when someone comes along with him to show him how, stays to see that he does it. This person's always out of a job, and he receives the contempt he deserves. And then he ends the quote by saying, which group do you fit into? That quote's not really a new concept, because Christ taught a parable that's very, very similar to that over in Mark 4. If you'll turn over to Mark 4, very similar parable. And this is the parable of the sower. And in verse 3 through 9, we find him giving the parable. But I want to look at the explanation to the parable, because later on, as we know in this parable, the disciples came and said, what's this mean? What is this? So Mark 4, verse 13, Christ begins his explanation. He said, and this is, again, the New Living Translation. Verse 13, if you can't understand this story, how will you understand the other things I'm going to tell you? Verse 14, the farmer I talked about is the one who brings God's message to others. The seed that fell on the hard path represents those who hear him, the message, but Satan comes along at once and takes it away from them. The rocky soil represents those who hear the message and receive it with joy. But like young plants in such soil, their roots don't go very deep. At first they get along fine, but they wilt as soon as they have problems or are persecuted because they believe the word. Verse 18. The thorny ground represents those who hear and accept the good news. But all too quickly, the message is crowded out by the cares of this life, the lure of wealth, the desire for nice things, so no crops produced. But the good soil represents those who hear and accept God's message and produce a huge harvest, 30, 60, even 100 times as much has been planted. We usually quit reading there, but let's continue in verse 21, because this is part of that. Jesus asked them, would anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket or under the bed to shut out the light? Of course not. A lamp is placed on a stand where its light will shine. Everything that is now hidden or secret will eventually be brought to light. Anyone who is willing to hear should listen and understand. Verse 24, and be sure you pay attention to what you hear. The more you do this, the more you'll understand, and even more besides. And in verse 25, to those who are open to my teaching, more understanding will be given. But to those who are not listening, even what they have will be taken away from them. Now, we all think that we're represented by verse 20. We're the good ground, right? Are you? Are you really? You think about that. It says you have to endure to the end to be saved. You're sitting here now. You might not be sitting here tomorrow. There are a lot of people that fall into verse 18 and 19 that we used to know. And the cares of their world choke them out. Don't let that happen to you. So many distractions that we have nowadays. All these electronic gadgets, all these time-wasting devices. We've got Twitter and hashtag this and that. It's Facebook. Goodness, we get tied up. We've created so many different ways in technology to waste time than we've ever had before. Sharon and I was at a restaurant several weeks ago, and we're to the point now, we've known each other for 40 years. We don't need to talk. And we're sitting across in the booth, and she gives me this little head gesture, and I knew what she was talking about. Look at these guys over here. And I look over, and there are two people across the aisle sitting across the booth from each other, just like we were, with their head down, doing like this on their iPhones. You know, it's better to talk to someone across town or across the country than to talk to the person right across the booth from you now. You know, it's crazy. They both sat there like zombies, not saying a word to each other, thumbing those iPhones until their food arrived. And then they ate with one hand, playing with that thing. They can't talk. They can't even talk to each other. It's crazy. You know, I think that's one of my pet peeves, because when somebody pulls one of those out when I'm talking to them. I was talking to my boss the other day. I was in my boss's office briefing him on something that was going on. And right in the middle of the conversation, he pulled out his BlackBerry. We've got these government-issued BlackBerries, and he starts playing with it. And I stopped right in mid for a long pause. And it took a long time, twice that long, for him to realize I quit talking. And I told him, I said, when you put that down, I'll finish. And he put it down. You know, the cares of this world choke out a lot of people. I'm not just picking on technology, but we get distracted. We get pulled away from what's important. The lure of wealth chokes a lot of people out. A lot of people that we thought were solid didn't have roots that went very deep, as described in verse 17. So we need to be careful that we don't fall into those verses. We need to be sure that we're good ground. We're not the hard ground that the birds can just pluck up and take away. You know, that article I read, it just wasn't this one person. That first paragraph says, the encouraging comments from our ministry all across the nation have been inspiring. It just seems incredible. Encouraging comments. You know, many of them also jumped ship when it was convenient and they saw their paycheck coming to an end. Keep your eyes open. You can identify that character. You can identify that character in yourself, and you can identify that character in others. Follow the character. Do the right thing every time. Their character will be made known by what they do, not what they say. Anyone. Verse 25 of the scripture that we just read is a very interesting phenomenon that I've noticed over the years that I've been attending God's church, but especially the last 20 or so years. Let's read verse 25 again. It says, to those who are open to my teaching, more understanding will be given, but to those who are not listening, even what they have will be taken away from them. You know that example about our friends from New Jersey? They didn't even understand it was feast time. What happens to that knowledge? What happens to the understanding? It's amazing phenomenon. The cares of this world. And just like verse 25 says, their knowledge is sapped out of their head somehow. What they used to understand, what they used to know. Final scripture for today. Let's turn over to Galatians 6. Galatians 6, and Paul tells them here in verse 7, don't be misled. Remember, you can't ignore God and get away with it. You'll always reap what you sow. Those who live only to satisfy their own sinful desires will harvest the consequences of decay and death. But those who live to please the Spirit will harvest everlasting life from the Spirit. So don't get tired in verse 9. Don't get tired of doing what is good. Don't get discouraged and don't give up. For we will reap a harvest of blessing at the appropriate time. Whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone, especially to our Christian brothers and sisters. So are you and I that good soil? Or will we fall by the wayside, like so many have, and be devoured by the birds? It's up to you. We need to be striving every day to build that foundation, to build on that foundation. The foundation is laid. But what material are we going to use? Are we going to use that hay, that grass, that wood? Are we going to build the character that will endure? Are we going to build on that foundation with gold, precious stones and silver, and develop that character that will carry us on into the kingdom of God?